pirate operators, that is, people who operate without licenses, from ever owning a low-power station. On the other hand, that same pirate could own, for example, WCBS-TV in New York City.
This is Mr. Petey Pete, and we're broadcasting live from Hudson. This is WGXC Accra.
Hello, WGXC listeners. This is Kelly Ann McCon. Camp Hudson Community Dinner returns. Come one, come all. Community Dinner is back at Camp Hudson on Tuesday, September 5th at 5:30 at our Solaris building at 360 Warren Street, Hudson, New York. Come experience community, meet new people and old friends over a freshly prepared meal with locally sourced vegetables made by our local volunteers. We'll be glad to see you there, and please, please bring a great friend.
Hey.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Upstate Films, featuring first-run and repertory films at movie theaters located in Rhinebeck and Saugerties, as well as live music, filmmaker conversations, staged readings, community events, variety shows, magic, comedy, and more. The Hudson Valley Picture Show traveling series brings cinema to locations around the region. The latest schedules, as well as upcoming pop-up events at the Community Theater in Catskill, can be found at upstatefilms.org.
WGXE is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Kyle of Athens, New York. WGXE's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXE as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxe.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
From the WGXE newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Raymond Pignone reports for Columbia Green Media. The latest housing battle the Hudson-Catskill Housing Coalition is facing is their own, as the organization says it will fight a large rent increase at its 361 Main Street office in Catskill by the landlord Foreland. The Hudson-Catskill Housing Coalition is a black-led tenants' right group working with low-income and public housing tenants in Columbia, Greene, and Albany counties. Foreland is an arts organization that recently came to Catskill and owns several buildings forming a campus near the Catskill Creek. Foreland is raising the rent on their second-floor office 135% from $400 a month to $950 a month. Coalition Director of Operations Elliot Mato said, and I quote, "We tried working with Foreland to see if this was an increase we could make happen over time, but unfortunately our landlord was unwilling to work with us and only gave us a short extension period. Steph Halmos refused and told us she had to get to market price. Our office lease will now be terminated at the end of the year. We're extremely upset and disappointed. But the truth is, this story isn't uncommon. The funny thing about all this is that it's not the price, it's the principle," end quote. Usually the Housing Coalition is working to help others with this problem. Mato said, and I quote, "We're experiencing exactly what we're trying to fight against, displacement due to rising cost of living. Our experience mirrors what our community faces every day. But instead of losing an office, people are evicted from their homes, pushed out by rents that are ridiculous," end quote. Halmos nor anyone else from Foreland immediately returned a call seeking comment. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Brendan J. Lyons reports in the Times Union that on August 29th, State Supreme Court Justice Kevin R. Bryant reversed his order from last week that exempted more than two dozen retail cannabis store applicants from an injunction that has temporarily stopped New York licensing processes. The judge has said cannabis regulators in New York, and I quote, failed to follow the clear language of the applicable legislation, end quote, when they created a program to award conditional retail licenses exclusively to applicants with past cannabis convictions. Bryant's rulings halting the spread of cannabis stores statewide is the latest delay in New York's cannabis program. Very few stores are open 2.5 years after legislators legalized the drug, and none locally. The judge said it was their own fault, as he said state regulators had implied 30 applicants were in the final stages of their application process and had met the requirements to open their store. But he later found out that many applications were not complete. Bryant said, and I quote, they have submitted a list which, by their own admission, includes licensees who are still finalizing construction and whose post-election inspections have not been scheduled or completed. It is also clear that an unclear number of the sites have not been inspected to ensure the site meets all the public health and safety requirements in the cannabis law and associated regulations. It is not clear to this court whether any of the 30 identified licensees have completed all post-selection requirements and inspections, and it should be clear that those who have not should not have been included on the list submitted to the court as set forth in the prior order, end quote. Bryant says the state's licensing process has been plagued with, and I quote, numerous potential defects, end quote, that, and I quote, have already resulted in numerous constitutional challenges to the actions, end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Joseph Coing reports at New York State of Politics that political strategists believe the Hudson Valley could decide who controls the House of Representatives in the 2024 elections. On August 29th, Representative Elise Stefanik said Republicans are committing $100 million to win the Hudson Valley. Stefanik said, and I quote, New York State was the battleground for House Republicans in 2022. I am proud to help lead the team effort to protect and expand our House majority again in 2024, end quote. The $100 million will come from the congressional campaigns themselves, the Republican National Committee, the House GOP's campaign arm, and aligned political action committees. Democrat House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries already launched a major offensive to retake key districts in New York. Dora Peacock, a spokesperson for the Jeffries-aligned House Minority PAC, said, and I quote, I think part of the reason the GOP is investing so much money is because they see the effort that we're putting into it. Molinaro's 19th congressional district will be one of the most important races as he turned the district red after incumbent Antonio Delgado left to become lieutenant governor. New York Democrats are targeting Molinaro's seat and those of Representative Nick LaLotta and Anthony D'Esposito of Long Island, Representative George Santos of Long Island, and Queens Representative Mike Lawler of the northern New York City suburbs, and upstate Representative Brandon Williams. Republicans are targeting freshman Democrat Representative Pat Ryan and his 18th congressional district. It is impossible to predict favorites as the district lines are still in question with the case now before the Court of Appeals. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
Listen to me. I am a pleading mother. I don't want any one of you to feel what this feels like.
Nashville parent Mary Joyce begged Tennessee state lawmakers to pass legislation to potentially prevent another school shooting like the one in March that left three of her daughter's classmates dead. Instead, a week-long special legislative session on guns and mental health ended with little to show for it. One bill was passed encouraging the safe storage of guns, while another increased funding for school mental health services. Pushing and shoving between lawmakers broke out on the House floor as parents shouted their frustrations from the gallery. A newly filed lawsuit aims to keep former President Donald Trump off the 2024 ballot in New Hampshire due to his involvement with the January 6th insurrection. Meanwhile, conservative talk show host Charlie Kirk says his listeners have inundated the New Hampshire Secretary of State's office with phone calls to ensure Trump is included.
And I'm trying to find the pressure points. We are trying to find the pressure points of where they're going to try to pull a fast one against the United States Constitution.
Both the New Hampshire Secretary of State and Attorney General have said any implication that either office is attempting to remove Trump's name is misinformation, and the state is carefully reviewing the legal issues involved. A federal judge has entered a default judgment against former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani in a defamation lawsuit brought by two Georgia election workers. Wandera Arshe Moss says false accusations that she committed ballot fraud made her question her decision to help with the election.
I could have done anything else, but that's what I decided to do. And now people are lying and spreading rumors and lies and attacking my mom.
Giuliani conceded last month he made false public statements, but argued he was protected by the First Amendment. He has been ordered to pay more than $130,000 in fees. A new rule by the Biden administration could extend overtime pay to more than 3 million additional salaried workers. Acting Labor Secretary Julie Hsu says the proposal stems from discussions with employers, workers, and unions nationwide.
To workers who are organizing for power and respect in the workplace, know that we see you, we stand with you, and we will fight for you.
Overtime pay would be extended to workers with salaries of roughly $55,000 a year, greatly impacting those in retail, food, and hospitality managerial positions. And Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell appeared to briefly freeze up Wednesday at an event in Kentucky. It happened just weeks after he experienced a similar episode during a news conference in Washington. The 81-year-old McConnell was asked by a reporter whether he would run for re-election in 2026, but was unable to answer. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Thursday, August 31st, Vermonter Rick Hubbard will walk the remaining 6 miles to the Roundhouse, New Mexico's Capitol building in Santa Fe. At 82 years old, he could be enjoying retirement, but instead he's walking across the United States to fix democracy. Hubbard says that he started his Walking to Fix Democracy project because our republic's democratic systems have been warped to elect representatives who put special interests and party politics first and have forgotten their duty to work for the common good. Hubbard says, quote, "We can make our political system fairer, more inclusive, more competitive, and more representative. Our walk is a nonpartisan effort to make the case in communities across the U.S. that fixing our democracy first is the quickest and most effective way to unlock progress on issues important to us all. Climate change, health care, education, infrastructure, the freedom to vote, campaign financing, and more." He pushes ranked choice voting, open primaries, and small donor democracy dollars campaign financing as fixes to focus attention on voters instead of special interests. Hubbard speaks at a rally on the east side of the Capitol at noon on Friday, September 1st, hosted by New Mexico pro-voter groups. He'll continue his walk into Colorado and Nebraska and hopes to arrive in Washington, D.C. by the inauguration in 2025. We have links to Rick's website at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org and will continue to follow his progress. I'm Brian Beal.
Last night, I congratulated Donald Trump and offered to work with him on behalf of our country.
I have just called President Obama to congratulate him on his victory.
I had the honor of calling Senator Barack Obama to congratulate him. Please.
I spoke to President Bush and I offered him and Laura our congratulations on their victory.
Now the U.S. Supreme Court has spoken. While I strongly disagree with the court's decision, I accept it.
The president is my opponent, not my enemy. And I wish him well, and I pledge my support.
And America must always come first, so we will get behind this new president and wish him well.
This nation faces major challenges ahead, and we must work together.
He has won. We are all Americans. He is our president.
In bringing about an orderly transition of government in the weeks ahead.
I congratulate you on your victory.
Congratulations on your victory.
We've got a president-elect. He's going to have my help. Cheers.
I have no bitterness, no rancor at all.
He will have my wholehearted support and yours.
The people have rendered their verdict, and I gladly accept it.
I urge all Americans to unite behind you,
and every good American will wholeheartedly accept the will of the people.
I accept the result of the election with complete goodwill.
This is an embarrassment to our country. We were getting ready to win this election. Frankly, we did win this election.
Since I have been so
Hudson, that was Beethoven. The song Circles from their 2022 album Light Moving Time.
All right, you're listening live to the WGXC Afternoon Show. I'm Tom Rowe in Accra, and on two different phone lines, we've got the folks behind the Chosen Family events calendar in the show paper. I don't know, you guys should introduce yourselves and tell everybody what is the Chosen Family. We've got Mike Amari from
who helps organize events at Opus 40 in Basilica Hudson and elsewhere. And Liam Singer, the owner of the Avalon Lounge in Catskill, on the line.
Yeah, so I'll go first. It's something that we make every month, a print-only physical little zine that has a show paper with all the shows listed for that month in it, and then like local art and writing, and it's like a little labor of love that we do every month, and like physically put 1,000 copies of it out around the Hudson Valley, you know, free to pick up. And yeah, we just waste hours of our lives doing it every month. It's great.
Liam, did he get that right?
Yeah, I heard the second half of what he said, and it all sounded perfect.
Yeah, sorry, I'm having a little technical issue here. So tell us what's going on this month.
September is in the Hudson Valley. There's a lot of fests going on. Tubby's is hosting a 5-year anniversary festival at the end of the month with a lot of amazing performers. Hosting a festival by Dromedary Records that has a lot of kind of 90s indie rock acts attached. And other than that, it's a pretty standard month in the Hudson Valley of everything from stand-up comedy to indie rock and dance parties. There are two new or newish venues, which is pretty exciting. One is called Graveside Variety in Woodstock. They are mostly offline, but you can find them by Googling them. And the other is called Prime Location in Kingston. Bit roving right now. It was in one space, but their shows may be moving to Blackbird Improv Shop. But you can follow Attention Everybody on Instagram for details about those shows. And Mike has a bunch of cool stuff happening at Opus 42.
Well, I was going to shout out, there's actually a third new venue that I know about that's opening in Saugerties, like in town, in Saugerties, in a church space there, in the side chapel, and it's called The Local. And they're looking to do like a handful of events every month. They kind of focus on like jazz and international acts and interesting like up and coming songwriters. So I think they just released their first run of shows on their Instagram and mailing lists and stuff like yesterday. So The Local Saugerties is another spot to check out. But yeah, I don't know. I'm looking at the show paper right now. A lot of good stuff. One thing that was interesting to me, which is also like a venue that we don't get to list often without it, Prattsville Arts Center. And they're actually showing a film that a local band just recently made while in Sicily playing some shows. And they're debuting that film, and the band is playing. The band called Dust Bowl Fairies from Catskill area. And Prattsville is like up in the mountains. It's like this little town, and it's, I love that there's a little art center there that does all these like interesting programs.
Awesome. And also on the tip of shows to travel to a bit, that one's the Cragsmore Stone Church at the end of the month. That's such a beautiful spot.
Yeah.
There's a sort of you called it solo ambient clarinet, Mike. And that's a really cool spot to travel to, the Cragsmore Stone Church. So that's on the 30th, Stuart Bogey with Michael Arthur.
Yeah. And then like Liam said, there's a lot of festivals in September and then like early October. I mean, it's kind of like every weekend there is multiple options of like great, interesting shows going on. Everything from like free events to like, you know, you could spend like $300 and like glamp on the back of the stage and smoke hashish or something. I don't know. But there's a big range this month. And I think it's like that rush before we hit winter and everything kind of goes back to being indoors.
Yeah, does it seems busier. I mean, I have a list of, I want to see the Gold Sparkle Band. I want to see Doug McCombs at Tubby's. I want to see the the Dromedy. I want to see Liam and Julia Kent and Alexander Turnquist in Kings.
Yeah, it's a good month.
Yes.
Definitely, you know, I think stuff, I mean, paying attention to shows, it feels like stuff doesn't really start to die down until January, February, and of course there are venues like like Avalon and Tubby's and Colony that are doing stuff year-round, but a lot of stuff is seasonal, and I think still in September and October we're going to see a lot of fun kind of outdoor stuff before it's too cold.
Yeah, I said this before with Liam last week on the phone, but I love the Catskill idea of doing festivals with Left Bank and Spikes and Avalon and
being able to wander around.
Yeah, that's going to be a really fun element of the Dromedary Fest. That was definitely by design. And yeah, the idea is that Catskill can kind of become totally involved in the festival. There's lots of great spaces here that don't often get used for that kind of thing.
Yeah, so I can also speak a little bit to the other stuff that's in the zine this month. Some local artists sent in some, like, really great, like, illustration with text stuff that I really love and I want to actually print more of. It's an Iranian woman who's local, and it's like, half the stuff she sent was, like, very serious, very intense, like, you know, supporting the girls and women protesting in Iran. And then the other half was, like, what albums I'm listening to. And I learned about, you know, these insects today, and, like, very fun sort of infographic-y sort of stuff. So I was really fun to put that in there. And then I also, another sort of visual text thing is this layout that Miriam, who's putting on an event called Verbatim, which is at Opus 40. It's sort of like experimental text and sounds in a little day-long, you know, not a festival, but a little expo sort of thing. And she collected, like, some of the very interesting contributions. That's some of the local presses that'll be there, some of the people who are reading or performing, like, a musical or spoken word piece. That's laid out. Which is cool to see. And then, you know, just random ephemera from local people. Someone sent in these photos of, like, a movie marquee, a movie theater marquee that are kind of like almost little haikus that were especially good the last couple months with some of the movie titles that were happening. So, but I won't spoil it. You know, try to grab a copy and check it out.
Post the show paper on the Instagram, but other than that, it's the show paper and our sponsors. Other than that, it's all analog. So you gotta find yourself a copy.
You used to say you have to be online to find it, but you have to be offline to find it, right?
Yeah, you have to be offline.
And yeah, looking through the show paper, one other thing I want to highlight is one that I know you really like, Mike. It's the Welcome to Night Vale live version of the podcast, Bathing a Colony, at the end of the month.
Yeah, there's sort of like a throwback to, like, old school radio hour stuff, but, like, very much like a satirical or psychedelic take on it. And it's really fun. I think even if you don't know anything about the podcast, it's still a lot of fun. The only difference is there'll be, like, these side jokes where the whole room will be laughing and you'll have no idea what they're talking about. But most of it's great.
So it sounds like a busy September. Have you left anything out?
I mean, there's four pages on the show paper. Left plenty out, but you know, those are some interesting ones. You know, I'm excited to have our friend Reckless Eric back at the Avalon and hosting Laura Hope for the first time. Wood River is a really cool musician from the city who's playing Avalon as well. She does kind of experimental pop, and lots of good stuff out there. It was fun.
Yeah, two big local albums from local musicians. The Reckless Eric has a new record, Leisureland, I think it's called, and PG6 from over in Copaic has a new album out, too, on Drag City.
Oh, yeah, and, you know, we didn't put in the show paper, but I saw that he's going to play a show at Not Donuts Records to celebrate that. Saw it too late to include it, but
I think I saw it down in Dutchess County. Is that where that is?
Yeah, it's outside of Stamfordville. haven't been yet, but I've heard it's a really cool spot. And yeah, if you follow them on Instagram, I know PG6 is going to do some kind of performance there.
All right, and so where can you get the Chosen Family? Can you plug a couple local places that go offline?
So I would say that we have our Instagram is at Chosen Family Presents, and every month, like Liam said, we post the show paper up on there, and we also share the location that we're putting them that month, which pretty much are the same month to month, but there is like a place or two here or there that change each month. Actually, like, we've been putting them at Dogwood and Beacon, and Dogwood's actually closing this month, so things like that happen. In Catskill, we put them at Avalon and Joust. We put them in a lot of, like, sort of in the hub, Hudson, Kingston, Poughkeepsie, Beacon, up and down both sides of the river, in what we sort of loosely define as our Hudson Valley zone.
And usually they're also here at Wavefront when we're open on Saturdays, so stop by too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll get you some copies.
All right, thank you, Mike and Liam. Anything you want to we forgot to mention?
The only other thing I wanted to mention is that people ask all the time about how we write, like we write little descriptions of each show in the show paper. And I just wanted to come out and say that it's all AI chat. And we just feed in the Bandcamp link, and it just gives it right back, and it's just sort of a way to streamline that.
True, and actually we're hoping to have the whole theme AI generated by next year, so
yeah.
Well, hopefully you don't go on strike soon after that.
I think we've got two more months of issues, so if you want to have anything published, send it in now.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Mike and Liam from the Chosen Family, and look for it out in stores near you.
All right. Thanks so much, Tom.
All right. Bye-bye.
My baby's got a transistor radio. She takes it everywhere we go. She takes it when we go out a walking, even to a movie show. One out just last night in the pale moonlight, I asked her for a kiss. But instead of hearing her whisper sweet words of love, all that I could hear was this. Where my baby lived to ask her for a date. There I was walking up the garden path around about a half past eight. When I heard a sound made my poor heart pound. It stopped me in my stride. I seemed to hear the voice of another guy coming from inside. I wonder if you're lonesome tonight, but no one to call. Maybe that's 'cause you're 11 feet tall. But all the world's a stage, they say. I've often heard that said. But I don't have a wooden heart. I have a wooden head. I'd like to take a transistor radio and throw it in the deep blue sea. I'm so jealous of her transistor radio, 'cause it takes her mind off me. I said, oh baby, please be mine. I want you for my own. Tell me, is your love for somebody else, or is it for me alone? It's also for Nagayo Guki of British Honduras, Mbongo Appledurian of New Guinea, and Fred Glockenlocker of British West Hartlepool. I swore to her that I would be always true and love her all the while. And on that oh so happy day in May, I took her down the aisle. Now do you take this man to be your loving husband? The preacher softly said. But he never heard you say I do, 'cause this is what he heard instead.
Gumma, 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 yeah, yeah. Gumma, 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 yeah, yeah.
You told me you were just 18 on the telephone. I thought that you meant 18 years, but you meant 18 stone, big fat mama. We went to
spend our honeymoon down on the island of Capri. I found ourselves a very small hotel, as quiet as could be. But when I got up to our room upon our wedding night, this is the sound that reached my ears as I switched out the light.
Darling.
Here, where's the radio?
Music he wants.
Louis Pugh, an endurance swimmer and ocean advocate and UNEP patron of the oceans, is swimming the length of the Hudson. Riverkeeper, one of the many organizations who do the work of keeping the Hudson River healthy, is being highlighted along the route. We are now joined by Dan Shapley, Senior Director of Advocacy Policy Planning at Riverkeeper. Welcome. Dan, can you begin by giving a brief overview of the important work that Riverkeeper is doing?
Sure. Riverkeeper has been around now for close to 60 years. We started as a group of fishermen on the Hudson River back in the 60s when there was egregious pollution of the Hudson happening from industrial polluters. And at that time, our founder, Bob Boyle, discovered a law that had been little used but outlawed dumping in navigable waters. So a small group of active citizens who were angry at the conditions that they found in the river used that law to go against polluters and effectively stopped a lot of that egregious pipe pollution even before the Clean Water Act had been passed. We continue that kind of work today by using the law wherever we can to enforce our environmental laws and to empower citizens to do so. And we also have a boat on the water to empower us to give the perspective of the water and the river to decision makers and to others so that they can kind of understand the issues and act on them. And then we really focus on using science through water quality monitoring and habitat restoration to improve conditions in the Hudson and for both humans ourselves who rely on the river for drinking water or for recreation and for all of the many forms of life that call it home in that vast ecosystem in the river.
That's amazing. Really important work that you're doing. Can you dive a little bit deeper into how your role as senior director fits into all of that?
Sure. Well, what I do is I get involved in a number of our priority projects in helping to develop strategies that can affect decision makers. I mean, we're a nonprofit organization that works with volunteers and has members, but we don't have any power on our own. Our power comes from finding ways to get people to use their voices and to use the legal processes that are available in order to have the decision makers, those people who are in power, make good decisions. And that essentially is the heart of what we do, is try to figure out how to engage people to use their voices effectively and strategically to achieve the best results we can to improve the environment around us.
Now, Riverkeeper is hosting Louis' stop in Troy as he swims along the river. What is important to know about this portion of the Hudson River specifically?
Well, this portion of the Hudson River is just extraordinary. It's the point where the estuary, which is that tidal portion of the river that extends from the Atlantic Ocean all the way up to the dam at Troy, so it's the northernmost point of that estuary where we have tidal influence from the Atlantic Ocean, and we're directly connected to the ocean. That means all of the life in that river is connected to the ocean. The fish that are spawning in the spring in Troy, even in the small creeks like the Winanskill, are at this time of year in the fall headed out back into the ocean. And they're feeding the whales that you can see breaching off of the coast of New York City in these extraordinary photos or these whale watching trips that are now occurring. So it's this it's that point in the estuary. It's also the point where the Mohawk River, the largest tributary of the Hudson, joins the Hudson. And the Mohawk River is an extraordinary river on its own, as well as been made into a canal, as has the Upper Hudson River. So these canals also provide, unfortunately, a pathway for invasive species to enter both directions, well, to go both directions. And invasive species can really disrupt the ecosystem as it exists today and cause some of those native fish and other creatures to really suffer, can changes to water quality. And we've seen that most recently with the invasion of a fish called the round goby. Mm-hmm. And it's something that we're trying to prevent future invasions through that pathway of the canal, and to preserve the local ecosystem. And these things really connect with the swim in a way, because the source to sea swimmer that you mentioned is drawing attention to the Hudson as an example for what rivers are facing worldwide. And freshwater ecosystems around the world are the most imperiled type of ecosystem that there is. The biodiversity loss in freshwater ecosystems is greater than any other type. So when we're talking about protecting the Hudson and seeing it as an example, it's really emblematic of some of the challenges that are faced by other rivers around the world.
Wow. And so the canal aspect, is that also what is contributing to the harmful algae blooms?
Well, fortunately, the Hudson River itself is buffered from having harmful algae blooms because of the tides and because of the mixing that results as a consequence of them. And in fact, rivers typically are less vulnerable to harmful algal blooms than lakes because they're flowing. The still water that can happen in lakes and occurs in lakes and reservoirs is one of the conditions that allows for the formation of algae. And you're exactly right. On the a river like the Mohawk River that has dams and has locks, so that you have really kind of created a series of lakes out of the river, there is a greater risk of harmful algal blooms in those conditions. And in fact, the town of Colony and the city of Cohoes rely on the Mohawk River as their drinking water source. And so the concern about the future risk of harmful algal blooms is really important in a place like the Mohawk River, where if that type of algae that can produce toxins would form, it would put the water at risk for 100,000 people or so.
So you and I know that the health of the river is really important to our community, but what should residents understand, particularly people that don't necessarily go to the river or understand how accessible it is?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, one of the things that's changed over the last 30 years is that we do have a lot more access to the river. What we see, for instance, Troy at the Ingalls Avenue boat launch, that was only built, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago or so. And before that, there wasn't that kind of access where a boater could put a boat in the river or a kayaker could put a kayak in the river. But we also see is that type of access point's not serving the neighborhood around it well at all, because that community could use all kinds of great access to the river, but not for boating, right? There's not a lot of people who have boats who are in that community. So the right access for the right community is still a struggle, still a challenge for the river, even though we do have more of it. In the whole Capital District, it's one of the portions of the river that's the most challenged for water quality, because all of the communities, Troy, Rensselaer, Albany, Watervliet, Cohoes, Green Island, rely on what are called combined sewers that carry both the sewage from our toilets in dry weather to the treatment plants, which is what we want to see happen. Get that treated before the wastewater is discharged to the river in a cleaned up condition. But those same pipes also carry stormwater, which is what flows into the off of the street into the storm drains that you see on the sidewalk. So when all of that rainwater enters the same pipes, it causes the sewage to overflow without having been treated. And so that happens at over 90 locations in the Capital District, making that part of the river after rain frequently unsafe for recreation. And there is work being done to reduce those overflows, which is good. It is long and expensive work, but it will be a long time still before we could, really get out of the river what we should, which is every community should be able to swim in the river. They should be able to have a floating pool or a beach. They should be able to cool off there. We have way too few places already where people can access safe swimming. It's going to be increasingly important that we have those places to cool off, especially as the climate continues to warm. So it's really, clean water is an important climate issue as well.
And so we are running out of time. We have about 30 seconds left. So can you talk about what's happening on Thursday?
So at 11 a.m. at the Ingalls Avenue boat launch, Lewis Pugh, who is the swimmer for the UN, drawing attention to rivers worldwide, but with his swim down the river, will be exiting the river, and people are welcome to come at that time and meet him and talk with Riverkeeper and the Media Sanctuary and others who will be in attendance about issues facing the river and about how we're trying to address them. And so we'd love to see anyone who's interested come down and join us.
Thank you so much for your time today. That was Dan Shapley of Riverkeeper, and I'm Elisha Bacon, a community organizer and Water Justice Lab media mentor, reporting for Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
As I was going down the road with a tired feeling and a heavy load, out jumped the sheriff and he hollered out bail, and he locked me up in the Delhi jail. Rotten old pork he gave me to eat, sour molasses to make it sweet. They piled my coffee in a rusty old pail, and that's the way they used me in the Delhi jail. Now I'm free and out of that door. I pray the Lord I go there no more, for the birds am a-flying without their tail. So to hell with the sheriff and the Delhi jail.
Barbara Moncure from the album Folk Songs of the Catskills. That was the Delhi Jail on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Have reported on the increase in COVID cases once again. Many people are asking themselves what that means and how to go about our lives and what safety measures we should be taking. So for some insight from an infectious disease researcher, I'm now joined by Dr. Erica Martin. Welcome to Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Thank you. It's so good to be here and to talk about this important topic.
So let's begin with getting to know you a little bit. What's your background and experience in the field of infectious disease?
Great. So I'm a professor at the University at Albany. I'm primarily in the Department of Public Administration and Policy. I'm also at the School of Public Health. I'm a health policy researcher, mostly focusing on infectious disease policy. And most of the projects that I do are with the New York State Department of Health and also with the CDC.
So with the increase of COVID cases, what precautions should people be taking?
Well, I want to start by saying I'm glad that you mentioned that there is an increase in cases, because I think that that's something that's maybe not yet well known. So as you know, there was a formal declaration of the end of COVID as a public health emergency in May of 2023. And with that, that doesn't mean that COVID has gone away. It's just gone away as a disease where there's this public health emergency. So there is still ongoing tracking. So the CDC still has a website that goes through the hospitalizations and mortality, wastewater surveillance. And I was just looking at the statistics this morning, and there is an uptick in hospitalizations. And so what that means is it looks like we're starting to head into another wave. So maybe this wave won't be as bad as what we've been seeing in 2020, 2021, but it does. The trends are looking like we will be going into another wave.
Are the reported cases, are not all of them being reported like they used to be? Has our reporting become less accurate and lower numbers overall? Because often we aren't actually defining our illnesses as COVID.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. So early on, we saw a lot of reports such as the number of positive tests or the number of cases that we think. It turns out that that wasn't always very accurate, because especially now that we have home tests, there's a lot of cases that were never reported. So now a better metric is hospitalizations. And so that doesn't catch all of the cases. It only catches the cases that are severe enough for hospitalization.
So knowing that there is an increase in cases, what are some ways that people should be implementing some precautions in their lives?
Well, the most important is to get a vaccination. So we're continuing to have more vaccinations come out. It sounds like there will be a new vaccine that should be arriving soon. I would encourage everybody to get a booster, even if you've already been vaccinated, even if you've already had COVID. It's important to get another booster shot. And the other is to think about your own personal risk. And one of the things that we learned in the COVID pandemic was, how do you balance your individual risk? So what I mean by that is, on one hand, you don't want to stay home all the time and be really isolated, because that's bad. It's bad for us socially. We're not able to interact and do our daily things. But on the other hand, you want to think through reducing the potential harms of being around communities and other persons where you don't know if someone's infected. So in my own case, I think about risk by, if I'm in a really crowded area or I'm in public transportation, I'm flying or I'm on a subway, I always wear a mask. Even if nobody else is wearing a mask, it's a very